time once again for Community Forum. And we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Gina Neff. Gina Neff is an associate professor of communications at the University of Washington and a member of the organizing committee for UW Faculty Forward, the union effort there. She has published two books on work, Venture Labor, Work and the Burden of Risk in Innovative Industries, about people who worked in the dot-com boom, and Surviving the New Economy, about labor unions' responses to the new economy. Gina, thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
So start out. Tell us how it is that you chose the University of Washington.
That's a great story. You know, most research-oriented faculty get very little choice about where they live, and I feel really lucky to have been in Seattle and at the University of Washington for 11 years. I was actually working at University of California, San Diego, and my then-fiancé was working here. We worked very hard to get two jobs in one place, and so the university's been very good for us. When I moved to Seattle from San Diego, I said in the middle of the winter, that first winter, where are my socks? I know I used to wear socks, but just a couple of years in Southern California can soften the hardest of us.
And I'm sure you know where your socks are these days.
Oh, absolutely. And my rainproof boots and my Gore-Tex.
Layers are the key. So you have extensively studied changes in the American workplace, and you're part of a union effort currently. So what do you see as the changes in higher education that are making this a key time in history for organizing faculty?
There are several faculty organizing campaigns going on across the country. And I think one of the things is there's been a big structural shift in higher education, particularly in public higher education. So for most states, the state governments are paying less money, and students and their parents are paying more. Within Washington state, we've gone from a situation where in 1980, the state of Washington provided 80% of the fees, tuition for students, in-state students. Now that number's dropped to 30. So there's a huge shift of the burden onto people getting their degrees and their families. So that's part. There's just a collapse of state support for public higher education. The other is that the in response, many colleges and universities have ended, in effect, the models that we all think of when we think of professors. So when we think of professors, maybe you imagine someone in a tweed jacket, a man in a tweed jacket with leather patches sitting in an office, having time to meet with students and write books and read and think. That kind of model of a professor, where someone's hired full time to do research and writing and teaching, is quickly disappearing. At the University of Washington, we went just 10 years ago, half of our professors, half of our faculty fit that model. So they fit the model of a teaching service research load in a tenured protected system. You get a job, you work hard, you become part of the institution. Now, University of Washington, only 30% of our faculty are those kinds of faculty. So we see this extraordinary rise in the number of part-time lecturers and contingent faculty who are working on short-term contracts. Now, these contracts often require people to go from campus to campus, piecing together parts of work into something that looks like a career. They often mean that a faculty member has little time to meet individually with students, or they don't have the incentive to get involved in building the institution. So increasingly, at big public higher education institutions like ours, we're starting to see this two-tiered system evolve of people, I am one, lucky enough to have the good jobs, the jobs that we all went and got PhDs for. And then the bulk of the other workers, the other faculty, who are really struggling. The challenges, I think, are we need to come up with creative and innovative solutions for both addressing these funding challenges that we're facing from state budgets, but also still ensuring that our students have access to quality instructors and to the kinds of research opportunities and research faculty that attract them to amazing institutions like the University of Washington in the first place.
So with the current model, then, those quality instructors, there's no enticement to become, let's say, an adjunct professor and get shuffled around and underpaid and overworked.
Yeah. So the state of Massachusetts recently required the public education institutions to recognize that for each hour in the classroom, it is a minimum of 2 hours on the contract. That is, in addition, prep work, meeting with students, responding to students' emails. So when we think about people teaching these courses, they're when you count those kinds of hourly accounting, they could do a lot better off as a temporary secretary. I mean, literally, after graduate school, I was after undergraduate, I was working as a temp assistant in a company, and I was making an hourly rate. And there's gray hair here. This was a long time ago. I was making an hourly rate that was more as a temporary assistant 20 years ago than the hourly rate that we pay to adjunct lecturers with PhDs today. So this is really a challenge. One of the other challenges is it doesn't help build or engender trust and loyalty and investment into the institution itself. So much that happens in higher education is not about the work that happens, the contract work that happens within the classroom. It's who's sitting on the committees, who's doing who's volunteering to take a leadership position, who's able and has the time to be involved in faculty governance. When we've collapsed this tenure system so that fewer faculty are hired to be full engaged faculty and instead hired on these short-term contingent temporary contracts, they can't get involved in the decisions that we typically think of faculty governance for the larger institution. So we really do see within institutions like ours this kind of coming split between the people who have the time and are paid to get involved and invest in the university, and then those who are there and really can't do that. Really, those faculty who really are not supported to do those things. And that's why we are trying to form a union.
And when did, at the University of Washington, when did this effort start?
Conversations started last academic year, and we think this is going to be a longer-term conversation that we have. The current effort came through our local association, American Association of University Professors chapter, and they began having conversations with different unions. They partnered with SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, and at first, to outsiders, that may seem like a strange fit until you recognize that SEIU is the largest organizer of faculty in the country at the moment. SEIU, through an effort called Faculty Forward, has been organizing on campuses at Duke, University of North Carolina, University of Chicago, Tufts, Boston, many institutions, both public and private. They have been working to try to get faculty issues front and foremost in these discussions of the changes of work.
So, to talk about the specific issues that, if you were to get a union, that you would like addressed.
I think for many faculty at the University of Washington, salary is front and foremost. And again, you know, on the scope and scale of problems in the world, one set of workers' salary may not seem life-shattering until you consider that we went through 4 years of salary freezes during the recession. And that at the time, on the one hand, the University of Washington is increasing in its stature as a global research institution. And yet, our faculty salaries are lagging behind. If we were simply to match salaries at our peer institutions, so the other places in our industry where people work at the highest levels, like we work at the University of Washington, schools like University of Wisconsin, University of California, faculty would need 16% raise simply to match those salaries. Now, at the same time, over this period, Seattle, as you know well, has become an increasingly expensive city. So we're in this situation where, on the one hand, you know, our salaries have stayed stagnant. On the other, we're in a city that few people can afford to live in anymore. So we're having a difficult time recruiting and retaining the best and the brightest faculty in the position. So that's part of it. And the second is that the growth of the University of Washington is happening in a couple of ways. And I like to think of it as a two-tiered institution or three-tiered institution now. One tier is a tier of an institution, of a higher education institution that is a world-class research university where the cutting-edge innovations and discoveries are what is motivating and celebrated and really driving the growth of that university within a university. On the other hand, we have, well, a teaching university that has an extraordinary mission to the students of the state of Washington. And in that university, we see a real devastation of the working conditions within the teaching mission of the university. Lab and quiz sections are being cut. Classes are getting larger. Students are not graduating on a time to degree. They're taking longer to complete their degrees because they can't get into the classes. And that the classes are being taught by these contingent faculty. The contingent faculty are getting no support for their continued professional development. That's one of the things that we would like to see changed. The contingent faculty are getting no support for their planning from term to term. And the contingent faculty are really being treated as if they're second-tier citizens. So we've got these two very different missions, and bringing them together within one university, I think we have the possibility of starting a conversation about the kind of institution that we want. And that's one of the reasons why the faculty unionization effort is so important. We can't have excellence in our research without also having excellence in our teaching.
And what has been the reaction by the administration to your move for unionizing the faculty?
We've made calls to the administration to stay neutral and allow faculty to make their choice. Unfortunately, we've discovered that an anti-union law firm, Davis Wright Tremaine, was brought in. More than $60,000 has already been spent on a union-busting law firm. I think this is shocking to people. We had hoped that we could have a conversation that really empowered faculty choice, whether this is the strategy they want to go or not. The administration has been very clear that they think that they can solve the problems within with internally, that they think that this is a problem that can be solved. And I think for faculty who have been at the institution for a long time, we've had a history of broken promises by a string of presidents. I think our current president may go down in history as the best one our university has ever had. But I don't think we can fix the problems of low morale and the problems of historically long salary compression without a strong union there at the table to push these items forward.
And I believe it came out just this week that either members of your committee or people who support your committee's efforts had done a open records request and discovered that Davis Wright Tremaine, in fact, has hired Hill and Knowlton to basically quash your union efforts.
We got the engagement letter with Hill and Knowlton saying what they would do for the administration, and it really it actually really is disappointing. And you know, here we have one of the world's largest corporate PR firms who's been engaged to message and spin how the university is a great place, and it is a great place. They've been tasked to say why a non-union strategy is the best strategy to propose, and it reveals that the conversation is about unionization on campus is not one simply among faculty; it is between faculty and an administration. So even though we have a leadership right now that's come through the ranks, knows the institution even better than I do, they've been there for a very long time, and they're engendering a lot of excitement and enthusiasm, still that this outside PR firm is the one drafting messages and crafting and framing the responses and working with community partners to try to keep the union out is really disingenuous.
And for those of you that aren't familiar or may have rung a bell about the name Hill and Knowlton, they were the PR firm that, in addition to supporting tobacco companies for years, had also engineered the testimony before Congress of the Kuwaiti representative to the U.S.'s daughter talking about the incubators in Iraq, that basically the Iraqi soldiers were coming in and pulling babies out of incubators and stabbing them with bayonets, and very tearful and very moving testimony right before the U.S. went into war. I think actually back that was in the 1990 U.S. invasion as compared to the 2003. So, and that didn't come out till much later that had been entirely engineered and brought to you by Hill and Knowlton.
Same firm, University of Washington. Mm. Yeah, and I think, you know, it also says what kind of institution do we want? You know, is this a public higher education institution, or is it increasingly a privatized one? Are we going to have create access and opportunity for the students of the state of Washington, or are we simply going to parse things out and sell them off to the highest bidder? I think there's a lot of worry among the faculty that the kinds of trends that we see of actively recruiting students from out of state to pay the higher tuition and the higher fees instead of providing seats for our in-state students is, you know, it's a trade-off that doesn't reflect our mission. You know, we're no longer a public institution, perhaps, but maybe we're just the not as expensive as private institution.
So, in addition to your organization working to bring a union to the faculty at the University of Washington, also understand that just this year you were working on just getting a seat on the Board of Regents. And I don't know why I was surprised to find out that the faculty didn't have a seat on the Board of Regents, but could you talk about that?
Yeah. So we've seen a lot of challenges to academic freedom and other issues coming up in states across the country. So in public universities across the country, there have been decisions made at the level of the Board of Regents or the equivalent that challenge deeply the very values that public universities are about. So, for example, some of your listeners may be aware that at the University of Wisconsin, the Republican governor, essentially Scott Walker, essentially destroyed the system of tenure. We don't fully know the implications of what's happening at Wisconsin yet, but we do know that a politically motivated politician reached down into the public university and said, I want that practice that basically is one of the cornerstones of the work we do in higher education. I want that one gone. And he destroyed it. So as an organizing committee, we recognize that if we want to ensure that faculty have a voice, we have several ways. One is to get people to sign union cards, have a union election, come to a bargaining table and negotiate a contract. That's going to be a multi-year effort. The other is to say, wait a second, what can we do to support faculty voices at the very highest levels of decision making? And that was what sparked the Faculty Regents campaign. So I, along with some of my colleagues, went to Olympia, testified before the House Higher Education Committee. And in one of the most joyful moments, I think, of my career, one of the representatives is actually a former student of mine. And yes, that does make me feel old. So we put forth a bill sponsored by Jerry Paulette that would provide for a member of the faculty to sit with voting privileges on the Board of Regents. The university administration came out in the testimony in support of this bill, as did our own faculty senate. So we're now working with partners on campus to try to get the details lined up for the next legislative session. I think for this session, obviously it's not going through, but we're hopeful that we can lay the groundwork this year for legislative gains next year. But this is what even a fledgling union, this is what even a new union campaign effort can do. They can take on the issues that matter to faculty and work together to organize for something better.
So the Board of Regents, is the makeup of that is decided by our state legislature?
The Board of Regents is actually appointed by the governor. So the changing the but it would take a change of law in order to change the composition of the board. And there's currently a student regent who is appointed by the governor. But there's no one person tasked with having a faculty voice in those decisions. Many of the members of the Board of Regents are University of Washington alumni, and I think that they bring a really rich and valuable perspective from their perspective of having been students. But we really feel that having someone who represents the faculty perspective can only help to strengthen and bring insight to the kinds of decisions that are made in the boardroom.
And approximately how many board members are there, and is the student representative a voting position?
Oh, golly. It's early.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, the bill, the details of the bill are still being worked out.
Okay. So we got about 5 minutes left. You had previously said that the reason that the state had collapsed its support, almost flip-flopped on the amount that the state puts in versus what students put in now. What is your perception of the reason for the collapse in state support? Because it isn't just here in Washington State.
Right. So most states have collapsed their support. I mean, we see there was a wonderful piece recently published about the percentage of in-state students at different different public institutions across the country. So at which universities are there a large number of in-state students? Texas actually has bucked this trend. The state of Texas has basically said, if to high-achieving high school students, if you're a high-achieving high school student, you've got a spot at one of our institutions. As a result, a school like Texas A&M, where our last president at the University of Washington is now working on a $1.8 million a year contract, I believe. At Texas A&M, 95% of those students are coming from the state of Texas. So Texas has made an investment to say, you know, we will support Texas students at Texas public institutions. The state of Washington, on the other hand, has seen, within a 10-year period, we saw a 700% increase in our international students. Now, I am fully supportive of internationalizing our student body. I'm fully supportive of creating more diverse voices. I think more diverse voices gives us a better educational experience for all. And yet, what's driving this is the collapse of funding for states. I actually think it's tied to a much larger problem that we've started to see these investments in our in future careers. We started to see higher education as an investment in a future career that the individual and their family should pay for, not seeing it as something that's actually a public good that benefits the state. We have this extraordinary opportunity in Seattle because University of Washington students graduates are more likely to stay here after graduation. They contribute to the economy here. They contribute to the growth here. They contribute to building communities and starting families and contributing to society here in our region. So why are we taking this short-sighted view of how we support our institution? Because it really is the bedrock for growth for the entire region.
Do you think the cutbacks have anything to do with the corporatization and the privatization, in a way, of public goods?
Absolutely. We are seeing we're seeing a response to the collapse of state funding for higher education across the country as looking towards other possibilities, other opportunities, other entrepreneurial models for higher education. So in effect, we're creating at the University of Washington small private programs within a larger state institution. So the internal language we say is fee-based programs. So these are programs that are running at higher than state tuition. And we've seen the conversion of many master's programs from a state-funded model where they're part of the public institution to, in effect, little private certificates within the larger organization. The thinking is that people will be willing to pay. But when we have public health students who are paying $50,000 for a master of public health, that kind of debt and that kind of those kinds of fees are really going to devastate the number of people that we can train to be good citizens for the public good.
Yeah, I understand student debt currently is about $1 trillion in the U.S. We're just about out of time. We're talking with Gina Neff. She is an associate professor of communications at the University of Washington and a member of the organizing committee for UW Faculty Forward. How can people find out more information about UW Faculty Forward?
Well, you could go to our website, and that's uwfacultyforward.org.
Very good. All right. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Again, Gina Neff, Associate Professor of Communications at University of Washington, Organizing Committee for UW Faculty Forward. And you can find out more about their organization, uwfacultyforward.org.